One update on Tiny Box Challenge, as was pointed out to me by one of you all. The four channel digital isolators shipped separately. For some reason, they got delayed. So those won't be here until Wednesday, at which point I'll hand them out. Sorry about that. I didn't notice that those were not part of what it shipped. If you need all eight channels, then you'll need these, and we'll get that to you as soon as possible. If you only need two or four channels in your design, just use the high side, the single isolators that you have already. They're all individually isolated, but it doesn't really matter. Even if you're using them for low side, it doesn't hurt you to have extra isolation. So only for people who need more than four channels, only those people are affected by this. But I apologize for that. Okay, any questions related to Tiny Box Challenge, previous lectures, anything about the course?
Homework 9 in 5 seconds.
Homework 9, I need to reschedule because I just learned I'm not allowed to have anything due on study day. So that'll probably be due. It's unfair at this point to move that up. So I'll probably move that back, have it due at that point after the final is assigned. I don't really want you having two things going on during your final time, a homework and a final. So suggestion would be to do it earlier, but I'll send out an email later today with the updated schedule and that assignment. I have your midterm exams graded. We're going to talk about that at the end of the lecture. We'll turn back. Okay. Something. So last time we were going through the state-based modeling effort. We've taken a buck as an example, but tried to remain more or less general by just talking about A's and B's, X's and U's. We went through, we defined the state space for the buck, looked at what a small signal model of this would look like, and then tried to linearize this, got to a point where we said, look, we really need to average. When we looked at what happens when I change the duty cycle, we noticed that there's this sampling type behavior in a PWM converter. And this is generally true of anything with some periodic modulation signal, whether on frequency modulation or pulse width or pulse time modulation. I have this effective control signal that's constant over one switching period. Once I switch, I'm done. I can't do anything until the next period. So whatever value of duty cycle or switching frequency I thought I should have at the beginning of the period, that's what I get, and I don't get a chance to modify that until the next period. Okay. That effective sampling behavior is what is lost when we do this averaging model, because averaging effectively removes all dynamics, anything going on at the switching frequency and its harmonics, and we actually have some interesting behaviors going on there down due to this sampling. Sampling at the switching frequency is going to give us dynamics close to it. So looking at the transfer function of just the averaging equation, you see that there's some gain roll off, there's some dynamics that will be inserted into our transfer function when we average it that are not actually derived from the converter itself, that are just as a result of applying this averaging function to it, which is something we do to model the converter.
Yeah.
So this is an equivalent. So if you take the averaging function and go into the Laplace domain, approximate it using the conversion here, you get that kind of function. Not really something I'm so concerned with you guys being able to rederive. Just wanted to show the general effect here. Okay. So what we looked at is, can we do better? Can we get away from this averaging? And we started down that path last time. the first thing I said is, let's see if we can just solve this state space directly to get a solution for actually how our converter states propagate. I did that. We had this little trickery where I multiplied by this integrating factor and got into this nice form where my state space equation, x dot is ax plus bu, became something that we can solve just by integration. And we did that, and we got this here. So this thing that looks like some weird matrix exponential times my initial state plus something that looks markedly similar to a convolution integral gives me the states at any given time for a single linear circuit. Okay. So for any of my switching converters, I can approximate the behavior of that circuit in a single switching subinterval as some linear equivalent circuit. We've been doing that since day one in the buck. When the FET is on, it looks like this. When the diode is on, it looks like that. Both of those are linear time invariant circuits that I can model very well using state space. Okay. And this will tell me at any given time when I'm in one of those subintervals what all of the states in my system are. Okay. If I allow myself to approximate my independent inputs as slowly varying, more or less constant over one switching cycle, and okay, my input voltage to my buck converter, VG, is not going to vary as fast as I'm switching. If it does vary, it's going to vary slowly. Then I can allow this term, U of tau, to be constant, pull it out, and directly solve this integral. And I get this matrix expression down here at the bottom, which I was arguing is a pretty cool thing. So now I've got a closed form expression for my states at any given time in any of these subintervals. What we're going to do today is take this and say, okay, if I have multiple switching subintervals, I can apply this repetitively to get from my states at the beginning of a switching period what they are, the end of subinterval one, then at the end of subinterval two, then at the end of a switching period. That's going to completely solve my converter operation. I'm going to do so without averaging, without approximation. So I take this equation, and where we left off last time was here, how do I apply this to switching systems? So I have my, for any subinterval, equation from the previous slide, x of t is, no, now's not a good time. E to the a t x of 0 plus a inverse e to the a t minus I d u. Okay. When I look at this converter, I break it apart into my two switching subintervals. When I'm in switch position one, when I'm in switch position two, and my state propagation is going to look like I've got some x of zero, and then I'm in switching subinterval one for a time DTS, which will take me to the states at DTS. And then I'm in switching subinterval two until I get to x of TS. And in each of these, I can use this equation above to figure out how my states propagate. So in switching subinterval one, I'm going to use my state matrix, my input vector, A1 and B1. That describe the circuit connections in that subinterval. And then in two, I'll use A2 and B2, which describe the circuit connections when I'm in switch position two. So if I plug this in, doing my first subinterval, x of DTS is going to be equal to e to the A1 T1, where T1 is the duration of this interval. I'm going to stick with it in this form, but note T1 is equal to DTS, T2 is equal to D prime TS. So if E to the A1, T1, X0 plus A1 inverse, E to the A1, T1 minus I, D1, U. That'll take me up to X of DTS. Then my circuit's going to reconfigure. And from whatever the states were at the beginning of this subinterval 2, now I'm going to propagate with A2 and B2. Okay. So 2, my states at the end of the period are equal to E to the A2. T2 times the initial states, which was X of DTS, the initial states for this subinterval, plus A2 inverse, E to the A2, T2 minus I, B2, U. So now, I can take this top equation and plug it in here for X of DTS to get now an equation combining these two, which is going to tell me how the states at the end of the period depend on the states at the beginning of the period. That's so bad. X of TS is equal to, gosh, E to the A2, T2, from here, and now I'm going to plug in X of DTS. That's this top equation, E to the A1, T1, X of 0, A1 inverse, E to the A1, T1, minus I, B1, U, plus A2 inverse, E to the A2, T2, minus I, B2, U. Yeah. So this is my initial condition. So start here. The times are the same, right? Because I start from time 0 and I go to time DTS. So this T1 kind of here and here are describing how long I propagate through this circuit.
Oh, okay. So that T with the first equation itself is not the same T as XT, right? So the T on the right of the first equation is the duration of the interval.
Right. So this is from time 0 at the top. Here, I could rewrite this in a way where I say this would be X of 0, mm-hmm. and my new time scale says 0 is at DTS. That's the new 0 on my time scale. That's when I'm starting the state and allowing it to propagate from there. Does that make sense? Okay, we've got this thing. Let me take this over to the next slide. I'm going to distribute this term, e to the a2, t2, over both of the terms inside the square braces here. So this is a simple case for a two subinterval converter, a buck, something where I've got a D and a D prime. If I want to model additional dynamics with buck, so let's say I want to model, I'm now doing my ZVS quasi square wave buck, and I've got really four switching subintervals now. I've got what were kind of D and D prime, but I've also got the two dead times where I've got resonant transitions in them. Okay. Those resonant transitions, I've got an additional cap, an additional state, but they're still fundamentally linear circuits. So I can still write my circuit equivalent, and it's got all linear elements. So I could have more than just two subintervals I need to propagate through. And I can write a general solution here for any number of different switching subintervals, just noticing the pattern. So if I apply this repetitively, what I get is this kind of term. Let's see. So this thing here was my final state. It got multiplied by nothing. My first state had to propagate through my e to the a2t2, and then my x0 gets these exponentials for every state I go through. I looked at a three state and a four state and a five state. State's a bad word. Three, four, five subinterval converter. I get a more complex equation, but it would always fall out. It looks like for n subintervals, x of ts, this first term, I'm going to get a product, use this capital pi as a product term, like a summation but multiplying instead of adding, from I is equal to 1 to n e to the aiti, and that thing multiplies my initial state. That models this first term. From I is equal to 1 to 2, it looks like that. Okay. This next one is a little weird, but I have my A inverse e to the AT minus I to U, and that gets multiplied by every subsequent state. So I've got one of those for every subinterval, and it gets multiplied by e to the AT of every subinterval afterwards. Mathematically, that looks like a sum, I is equal to 1 to n, of a product of these exponentials that goes from, these are different, k is equal to I plus 1 to n, e to the ak tk, and that multiplies AI inverse e to the AI TI I BI U. As far as equations go, this one looks a little bit nasty, but it's actually not too bad in that it's a real easy equation for something like MATLAB to solve. Got these kind of nested summation products and all these matrix exponentials and things, but MATLAB, for matrix laboratory, is a really great tool for working with matrices, doing multiplication exponentials of matrices. It can solve this sort of thing in a couple milliseconds. Where does that give us an advantage? Well, so I've got states at the end of my period are equal to something that depends only on what my converter is, how it's connected, and what the times are. Times the initial states plus my inputs times something that depends only on the circuit configuration. So I can rearrange this and solve what these states are, noting that in steady state, I know x of ts has to be equal to x of 0. If I rearrange this and set x of 0 is equal to x of ts, get is something that looks like 0 is equal to x of ts equal to, let's track this left turn over, and then I'm going to have I plus this, and I'm going to multiply by the inverse of that over on the right. Looks like algebra, but keeping in mind that these are matrices, so inverses, I don't get one, I get the identity matrix, these kinds of things in my matrix algebra. What this is going to give me is I'm going to have I minus the product, I is equal to 1 to n, e to the ai ti, multiplying this summation, an inverse, to get it back over. Applause, welcome. Right. This thing's pretty cool. So now, assuming I don't have to do this by hand, assuming I get MATLAB to help me, this equation now tells me my steady state operation for any converter without any approximation. I didn't do small signal, I didn't do any averaging. This is the direct solution to any converter of any number of subintervals, any number of states, as long as in every switching subinterval I can figure out a linear equivalent circuit. Okay? And I can solve it in milliseconds if I've got a reasonable computer. Okay. Caveats to this. This assumes that you know the times of every, that you're in every subinterval, okay? And in a CCM buck, that's defined, okay? I give it a D, I got DTS and D prime TS. In a DCM buck, I don't know initially, right? Because I have this uncontrolled switching action. I turn the MOSFET on for DTS, and then the diode's on for a while, but then it shuts off. And unless I know that time, I can't plug in a time for that subinterval, right? The difference between controlled switching actions and uncontrolled switching actions. Controlled switching action, I apply a gate signal to a MOSFET, it switches. Uncontrolled, the diode shuts off whenever current hits zero. I don't know where that is until I go in and solve the circuit. Maybe somewhat harms the beauty of this in that I have to still do some circuit analysis on the side to find that time, right? But if I don't have any uncontrolled switching actions, anything that's switching based on the states rather than based on my control signals, I don't even have to analyze the circuit. I can just plug in. Okay? Here's what it looks like. Plug it in. Here's the connections. There's your steady state solution, an arbitrary operating point. Okay? There's my caveat to this. Okay. So that's steady state analysis using this state space model. Now what I want to move into is dynamic analysis, which is a place where this will really shine. In order to do that, what we're going to do is we're going to really look at this thing as a discrete time system where I now have the propagation equations, which can tell me from a state at the beginning of a switching subinterval, what do the states look like at the end of the switching subinterval. I've gone through and seen how to do that over a period in steady state. And the steady state part was applying this assumption that at the end of the period, my states are the same at the beginning of the period, so I must be in steady state. Allow myself to go into dynamic response. This is no longer true. I'm in some sort of transient. My states are moving. So we'll look at this thing as a discrete time model. And to start, let's just take single subinterval. I've got my original equation here, x t equal to e to the a t x 0 plus a inverse e to the a t minus I b u. And I'm going to do again a perturbation and linearization of this. So it's not going to be much in the way of linearization, but I'm going to replace my states at the beginning and at the end of my propagation with some steady state plus the perturbation plus an x hat. Let's see what I get. So I'm going to have capital X of t plus little x hat t equal to e to the a t capital X 0 plus hat 0 plus a inverse e to the a t minus I d. And I'm going to leave this as u. If I cared about the response from the input, I do u plus u hat. At the moment, I'm going to say the input's slowly varying. I don't really care about its response. What I'm really trying to get towards is a control to output transfer function. How are things going to change if I alter my duty cycle, alter my phase shift, alter my frequency? Okay. So under that, so I'm not going to worry about the line to output, my VG to output, or my output impedance for the moment. So under that, now I've perturbed. What I've got is a combination of my steady state terms, which don't have the hats, and my small signal terms, which I'll have hats on. So I can eliminate all the steady state, look at my small signal only. What I get is x hat of t is equal to e to the at x hat of 0. Is all that's left. And I can quickly deduce for n switching subintervals, I'm going to get x hat of ts is equal to another one of these products. And this now is really pushing me towards the title of the slide, a discrete time model, right? Because I'm starting with some initial states and I'm predicting the states at the end of a period. Could really talk about, okay, this is a discrete time model. It's sampled at the switching period. I call this x hat of n is equal to, we'll call phi x hat of n minus 1. The phi is equal to this product term. If I know the states at the beginning of a period, my nth minus 1th period, I know the states at the end of it. This is the, we've really applied superposition here. We're looking at the contribution to my final state just from my initial states. So this is just what the circuit does. But the bigger question, the question here is still, well, how does the control affect this? Right? So now if I start changing the timing, I've assumed I know all the times of each subinterval. And if I want to look at how the control affects that, I need some term. This should be x hat is equal to this plus something times c hat, right? I need some contribution of my control to this in order to use this for modeling a, you know, a feedback loop. Right. So we'll derive that in the upcoming slides. Still have time. So note here on what this starts to look like. So if I look at my converter and I'm trying to design a feedback loop around it, before it was some GVD was my converter. And then I fed back and I had some compensator and then I had a gain of 1 over VM for my modulator. Now we've argued the modulator itself looks like a sampler, right? And if the modulator is a sampler, that means that whatever I put into it over here, I'm in discrete time. Then my converter itself is some sort of equivalent hole that takes some discrete time. Every period I get one duty cycle, so my input is these discrete time events, and output something continuous time, an output voltage that exists at any given time, right? As we go over towards this discrete time model, we're now going to move into discrete time, and I'm going to end up with things like GVD of Z as my effective transfer function of the converter. My compensator still could be continuous time. Once we're moving into discrete time, it somewhat makes sense to look at things like digital control, where I would take my output voltage, run it through an A to D, which also will have some sampling effects, feed that back, and have all of this done something like a DSP. So we're gonna get two things out of this. By going to this discrete time sample data model, one, we're gonna be more accurate. The big thing is it's valid at all frequencies, meaning to the switching frequency and above the switching frequency, this model is gonna be mathematically valid. It's gonna predict the actual converter behavior. It's also going to be much more well suited to a digital implementation. Everything's already in discrete time. And really kind of a history of things. You see kind of the timeline here. It's not a brand new idea. Way back when Tuke was doing his thesis, who was the original guy who kind of did a lot of this sample, averaging model for power electronics. This discrete time and sample data model were developed simultaneously. One very accurate, one not so accurate, but a lot easier. Community decided I like easy things more than I like accurate things. And that was a big choice, having this averaging approach that was simple and somewhat intuitive. Allowed power electronics to really grow, allowed a lot of people to now simply solve circuits, come in and come in with new designs. at the expense of accuracy and generality. Really only works well on things where all my dynamics are way below the switching frequency. I start looking at things that have dynamics at or close to the switching frequency. I need a more accurate tool. We're going to bring this discrete time modeling back from the dead and say, yeah, back in the day, this was good enough, but we're a lot smarter now. We can handle this discrete time model. We prefer the accuracy it gives us. Okay. Not on time. Let's pick up here next class on the derivation of the small signal model, including the control, including how my control signal is going to affect it. And I want to jump and talk about the final for a moment, or the midterm, excuse me.